Okay, good.
Okay, so thank you again, Rabbi Rubin, for once again agreeing every time I ask. Very greatly appreciated. We are the recipients of his Torah. Next week we are off, and the week after is Rabbi Dr. Berger. Rabbi Dr. Berger. And then for the summer, we shall see. Without further ado, everyone has a chumash, and Rabbi Rubin.
Thank you. So I would just change the introduction, not agree. It's an honor, and thank you for giving me this opportunity. So Nazir, as I wrote in the title of the shiur, has a various set of inner contradictions and ambiguity attached to the Torah's description of what a Nazir is. And I'm hoping that tonight, by the time we hit Maariv, we'll be able to at least have a better understanding that the ambiguity that's attached to Nazir is, I believe, is deliberate. And that it's not meant at all to be confusing. And we can even see the same conflict that agrees not only just between the Psukkim of the Torah, but also the commentaries who even speak about Nazir from a more holistic point of view. So if you just look at the Psukkim, please, it's a Perek Vav. And we'll come back to this hopefully when there's time, that the laws of Nazir come right after the laws of Sota. So we'll try to circle back that afterwards, because Rashi oftentimes tries to glean some interpretation about juxtapositions of different parshiot in the Torah, which is also interesting if you're studying parshiot for a long time, because you also know that Rashi is very comfortable with the Ein Mukdam V'Mukhar B'Torah. So when it's convenient, is Ein Mukdam V'Mukhar B'Torah, and when there's some moral message to draw out from the Chumash, Rashi is always pretty consistent about using the order of sequence of stories in order to learn some message. So Perek Vav, Vayidbar Hashem Moshe, Debar B'Yisrael, Ish Yishak Yafli Neder, Nazir L'Azil L'Hashem, you know there's no Yain, V'Sheikhar Yazid, Chometz Yain. So we know the big three is, Nazir says, he refrains and abstains from drinking wine or even grapes. He can't you can't get a haircut and use a razor, and also he can't become tamei meit. Those are the three big ones, and we're going to circle back to those as well. What's missing from the chumash, we'll see also why. There is no time; it's not restricted or proscripted to the amount of time. It's just a statement, and that's a little bit vague, and it doesn't tell us, like often doesn't chumash, whether a nazir is something permissible, encouraged, or something that we should be apprehensive and reticent about. And that's where the conflict comes, because depending on where you cut the commentary, that's the opinion you can conclude. Because the end of the Nazir, the Parsha Nazir, you know, the Nazir brings a Karban Chatat. So if you skip down to the end of the Karban Nazir story, so the obvious question then is, if he has to bring a sin offering for being a Nazir, then you have to also ask yourself, then this sounds like, just from explicitly from the Pasuk, it seems the Torah is condemning, or at least not recommending, the concept of Nazir. We also know that there were biblical figures who were Nazirim, who are the two that come to mind for the Tanakh at least, Shimshon HaGibor and Shmuel, right. And both were mandated to be Nazirim before they were born. So perhaps because we were told they're going to be Nazirim before they were born, then you can't use them as a frame of reference, because they obviously are exceptions to the rule, because their whole process, they didn't select to be Nazirim, it was selected for them. Now, the Ramban takes a very, a typical, consistent point of view about Nazirut, because the Ramban does strive for Kedusha and separation. We see this also in Parshat Kedoshim, where the Ramban says Kedoshim to you, is that he really does see a certain sense of refraining from the world around us as an aspirational goal. So take a look at the Ramban. It's the first commentary. V'tama chatat she'akriva nazir. So if it's something which is not advisable and it's not recommended, and something we should be concerned and apprehensive about, that's the reason for the chatat. So it says, no, that can't be. The reason why the chatat is different from what you would think. He says, Val derech hapshat, ki ha'ish hazeh chotei nefesh b'mlot hanazirut. The reason why the Nazir has to bring a chatat is because he's stopped being a Nazir. which is almost counterintuitive, that a person reached this high level of purity and he had aspirations to be a holy, separate individual from the community, and therefore he reached that pinnacle, that apex, he reached that zenith of spirituality, and refrains and pulls back, that person has to bring a Korban Chatat. So the Ramban is actually leaning on opinions that already appeared in the Gemara. This machloket was not originated in the commentaries in the Rishonim. It actually originated much earlier, but we're going to pick it up from the Rishonic period of time. The Rambam, which is well known, this dialectic between the two views, is pretty well known with those who are studying Nazir. The Rambam says actually, and Rambam is consistent to his worldview. It's interesting, they both take their points of view, which is manifest in many different aspects of their commentary. So the Rambam writes clearly that the reason why he has to bring a Korban Chatat is because he separated himself from the world and he added a level of restrictions that were not mandated, and that as a result of that he had to divorce himself and disassociate himself with what should have been the normal course of a person's life. Because remember, the Rambam says that a person, take a look at Hilchot Deir Perepus, Mishnah Vav, Shem Yomar Adam Hoel Ba Kina Ba Tava Ba Kavod Kiyotzem Derech Ra'ahim Umotzien Otam En Olam. Things, these characteristics and these characterological deficits, these lacunas, could take us away from our spiritual quest. Efrosh Mehen Bioteh Bet Rachek Letzarachon, and I'll take on a more extremist view of my life. Ad Shelo Yochal Basar Velo Yishtei Yain, below Yisaisha, I'll live as an isolated, separate, disconnected, disassociated, disenfranchised person. Below Yishay Bedirana, and I'll have a house, a life of deprivation. Below Yabash Mabushna, so on and so on. And he goes on, no, this is incorrect. And I skip three lines. I'm a halech bederech zo nikra chote. A person who lives this life is considered someone who's a sinner. The chiper alav miasher chatal nefesh. And then the Rambam just makes an easy segue. And it says right after you'll see the parenthesis. It says Bamidbar vav yud aleph. Amru chachamim umayim nazir shlo pirash min el min ayayin. If a Yaz Nazir who only really separated himself from wine, tzorch kapara moniatz mo mikol davar v'dor alachat kam v'kama. Certainly someone who separates himself from the world as a way of life should certainly be considered a sinner. So this is the what seems to be a binary frame. It's either right or it's wrong. Ramban takes the point of view that it's right and it's encouraged and it's supported to become a Nazir. And the Rambam takes the point of view, no, this is completely wrong. It flies in the face of what we know is what our prescription of Torah is, to engage the world, bring our knowledge, our personalities, our creativity. It comes like the Adam 1, Adam 2 concepts of Rav Soloveitchik. And therefore the person who becomes a Nazir is sinning against God.
The Chatos, and all of the talking here, after he's Tamei Meis?
Yes. After he's fin, right? After his Nazirus is shut down.
Is that, according to the Rambam, he should automatically have to bring the Korban.
Yeah, right.
Once he takes it on. It shouldn't be when he didn't stop.
So I think, without having...
I didn't analyze so
concerned. No, you're 100%. I think the Tamei Meis is not a cause and effect. You're linking, oh, because he, which we'll see, the Netziv is actually hinting to what you're just saying.
I'm just reading the Sukkot.
It's the sequence. But if a person, the Stam Nazirut Shloshim Yom, that's what the Gemara says. So let's say a person says, I'm going to be a Nazir for 30 days. 31 days, you bring a Korban Chatat. That would be both the Ramban and the Rambam. That's incontrovertible. What is disputed is what's the reason. So the Ramban would say 31 days over, wow, you gave up such an exalted position of spiritual quest. Bring a Korban Chatat. The Rambam would say is, now that you're re-engaging the world, you should know, my friend, there's a price to pay. What you just did was not correct, and we're not happy with your behavior. So I'm going to come back, even though it's copied here, speaking of order, you see there's a section here from Rav Cook. I'm going to come back to that a little later, just so on page one, it was just where it fit. So it was convenient. The Rambam... The Rambam in Hilchot Nazirut has a different approach, which is even more perplexing. So if you take a look at the second paragraph on the page two, this is the Rambam from Hilchot Nazirut, it's Perek Yud. Ha'omer Hareini Nazir, Someone who swears to God, derech kedusha, someone says, I am going to be a nazir, because I have a spiritual quest to pursue a holy level of existence. There's the Rambam. There's the Rambam. Okay, same Rambam. Harezin na'eh umshubach. So a person who declares, second page, second paragraph, person who declares, I want to pursue a spiritual relationship with God by sacrificing my physical expression, harezin na'eh umshubach, val zen amar nezer elohav ra rosho. Kodesh hu lad Hashem. The last halachot nechon zirut. So the commentaries point out, and interesting, I was just reading Rabbi Sachs today. He references both sides in case you get to it. And just to tell you that I was a little bit deliberate in the way that I was putting this class together, I made this title on Tuesday, and Rabbi Sachs's Dvar Torah comes out on Thursday. So I do have an alibi on this, but I will confess that if you brief through is the multitude of his amazing publications, you'll find this Rambam in a contradiction in one of his books. So it's I can't tell you that Rabbi Sachs hasn't said it before, and I can't tell you I haven't seen Rabbi Sachs say it before. That said, I just didn't lift Rabbi Sachs's talk from Thursday. As you'll see, there'll be sources here Rabbi Sachs did not reference at all, and you can go back and check that out. That Baduk. And getting back to this, and you'd ask me, so what would be so wrong if I did just reference Rabbi Sachs? Because so what do you have to come to a class Thursday night? You just read Rabbi Sachs's Dvar Torah. That would completely undermine the legitimacy of your Thursday night outing. Getting back to this, how does the Rambam create this internal conflict of what a Nazir should be? In Hilchot Deot, which is about character, the Rambam says that this is prohibited, and Hilchot Nazir, he said this is something which is just something we should all aspire for. So take a look at the Netziv, and I'm going to start slowly chipping away at this before we get to the answer. The Netziv is in the right corner underneath the Rambam, the second paragraph. The Netziv says the following. So let's pick it up where it says, we see that arrow?
Yeah.
So this is what this is what Dr. Friedman was actually referring to. The Netziv hints to it. Because the Netziv does connect the fact that the Torah juxtaposes abruptly encountering a tamei mate and then having to suspend his nazirut. So it's more than just coincidence. It's more than just happens to stance that one pasuk precedes the next pasuk. The Netziv says that there is implicit message in this. Avachar she'ira lo ba'ones zuasiba. That the Netziv starts off and says that a person is there is a virtue, there is a value in being a nazir, but after this onus, after this accidental encounter with a mate, ot. And he writes who, it looks like it's a who, but I would say it's an ot. She'enu ra'ui l'kach. That the reason why the nazir encountered this mate is that he should never have chosen and selected and elected to be a nazir. He wasn't appropriate. He was not, didn't fit the case. V'im kein b'chinam tzier atzmo min hayayin. And since he shouldn't have aspired for this highest level of kedusha expression by depriving himself of wine, b'kesh davar shegavoa mi'erko. He went out of his pay grade. A person needs to understand their strengths and their proclivities and their predilections and their weaknesses and their deficiencies. And you can't break out of that. And but this is really interesting because, again, I think there's a lot of consistency, and it's the beauty of learning Chumash. If you can stay with a couple of commentators, you can actually see sequence thinking that goes across several parshiot. So, for instance, the Netziv writes in the beginning of Nitzavim, "V'atem Nitzavim ayom Hashem kulchem, tapchem, nishechem, yerechem, mishovei memecha, ad chotzvei atecha." So you see that the Netziv writes there in those psukim that the reason why the Torah went into such specifics of who is standing there in Nitzavim is because Am Yisrael is not made out of one singular, linear group of people that all have the same personalities and commitments. There are a range of personalities, and within that range we have a totality of Am Yisrael, and everybody matters, but everybody matters on the level that you're on, a little platonic in that sense. So the Netziv says that it's reasonable, it's encouraged to accept and to understand that no two people who look alike are always going to be two people who are going to have the same feelings and connections and intensity, even though we're trying to make a cookie cutter approach to religion oftentimes. So says it's not. So a person has to know his strengths, and this person symbolically stepped out of his kind of religious boundary to go to an area where he wasn't, shouldn't have been there for, to begin with. Now, because you can question very legitimately, how does a person ever know to get to a higher level if you don't aspire and experiment where you can go in life? So really, is an Netziv just expressing that people should remain status quo and stagnant, and they should remain stationary and satisfied with their select area of the sanctuary that they've chosen for themselves? Is that what he's saying?
No, but more than that, it doesn't follow. So that means there are individuals out there who should become a Nazir.
Correct.
He says, who's that?
Who's how do you
that?
Know?
Because every
try.
Person has to bring a Korban Chatas.
Right.
So why? So who is that then?
Right. So the Netziv would tell you that person who selects to be a Nazir will not accidentally hit a Tameh mate on the way. He's calling a message from here. The reason why he ran into this Tameh mate that he should never have been a Nazir to begin with.
Yeah, but the Stam is 30 days anyway, and still
and you still bring a Korban Chatas. Right. And that's a good question. Right. I think the Nazir is just looking to... I think the Netziv is looking to drive home a point. And I was planning on saying this a little bit later. I want to make sure I'll get to it. Maybe I'll mention it now, because Rav Kook has a similar point. Remember, Rav Kook studied in Volozhin and was a very close student as a young Rav Kook under the senior Netziv. And the Netziv dispatched Rav Kook on many private conversations within the yeshiva, especially to speak to other students who we felt needed a little bit of Kokoni inspiration, even in the late 1800s, before he became, we know as Rav Kook later on in his life. So it's not accidental that you'd find a lot of Kokonian sources of Rav Kook thinking that he drew down from Volozhin. Since Rav Kook's mother was Hasidish, so there's a lot of integration in Rav Kook's writing between the two spans of worlds that he somehow is able to process. But the concept of individuality in Judaism is important, and that the message that I think he's trying to bring out here is flies in the face of what we would now today, where there are some groups that would choose to make all Torah practice, even those that it would be considered beyond what's expected, to become the norm. And what I believe what the Netziv is saying, and you can look at also the end of the Rambam, is that we should be expected to do what's in the halacha, but let's not take what's above and beyond halacha to become the new norm. That should be an individual's choice. That would be the message I would get.
If it was the case that the particular person was not supposed to really do this, there wasn't one level to do this, and the Tamei mate, his experience of Tamei mate is proving to him, is showing to him that that's the case, why is it that after he purifies himself, he then has to start again? After his Tamei mate, doesn't he have to count his Vizira again?
I don't think so. I'm not an expert in that, but I don't think so. I think once you're over, right? Unless he made a neder, I guess. If he made a neder for 45 days and he stopped it in 30, does he have to do the other 15?
I thought he has to recount.
Yeah.
I think Rashi says his whole count is
if
zero.
If he didn't finish it.
And he has to start again.
If he didn't finish it, right.
He doesn't, in other words, the previous days don't even count.
Yes. Right, everything is risked.
Yeah. So that doesn't quite...
No, it doesn't. A lot doesn't. It also doesn't fit in, I think, very practically, that that we don't have a life that if X happens to you in your life, you can interpret it because of Y. That's God in the world is much more sophisticated than just trying to create a cause and effect in our lifetime.
Yeah, but there is that Rashi in Mishpatim where he talks about the intentional killer and the accidental killer.
Like Gemara
Mato.
Right. So I think all that's a metaphoric.
Right.
We're not really... Mara, I know that's not the Pasuk interpretation, but I always like to corrupt the interpretation of the Pasuk. Mara bu masach Hashem This is not pshat and pasuk, but every time I see it, I think it almost should have been the pshat, that God's great actions are so great, and the next pasuk is ish bar lo yeda. A fool doesn't know that. A fool thinks that he can understand the way of the world, and that's why he's a bar. But that's, if you look in the translations, let's say of the Sachs translation of the Siddur, which is one I would always prefer, you would see that's not the interpretation of the pasuk. But I wouldn't be upset if you used it that way, because don't blame me if you get to Shmei Shemayim and you said that you thought you understood a way until some guy told you the other way. If you take a look at the Meshech Chachma, also live more or less in the same time, right where the arrow is, V'alze ein zman rak kol achad yishe'er b'nafsho im zman ze yaspik ligdor kocho yitro tai b'shloshim o b'meah. Person has to decide how long he would need in order to work on his character. Hakol afi mashahu adam. I think that should probably be it. Babchina ledat emat nigmar shlemuto melato shekachot yitzro lo yolchu sholel. And the idea of this is that a person should use nazirut in order to ameliorate or neutralize or remediate his evil inclination. That's what Bahachemda lo yit el lehaskel kishu mistakel in ayatzmo kamabita mukbumukulat acherim, and that a person should have the strength of character to understand himself like he would understand the actions of somebody else. In other words, person has to be honest with themselves. And the Meshech Chachma continues. And he says that the idea of the Nazir, which is, I think, kind of simple, is that a person has to make sure that he lives a holy life. And if there's a sense of impurity in the life, you have to respond, even if that impurity is something that needs more extreme response. And it's an interesting idea, and it is going to go back a little bit to the Rambam, as we'll see in a few minutes, but it's different than the Ramban. Because whereas the Ramban says that a person who is a Nazir is doing it to acquire a level of Kedushah, this commentary would say you're doing Nazirus as a way of remediation and an intervention. And it would be consistent with the Rambam's point of view, with the Shvil Azav, with those of you who remember that a person, I don't know if I included in the pages here, that the Rambam writes that a person should always go in the middle of the path. It's something which was very philosophically known in his time, but he popularized it. But a person has an extreme character weakness to one direction, he should move himself all the way to the other extreme for a long enough time so he comes back to the middle, he won't have that inclination any longer. So there would be a third category of commentary. The first commentary of a commentary is that a person should strive for greatness. The second one is don't do this at all. And the third category of commentary is, well, do it only if you need it. It's a prescription. It's a spiritual medicinal approach to a spiritual weakness. Meshech Chachma has some very interesting comments to make, and beyond that, but I wanted to draw that out. So we're still kind of left with what was the Rambam thinking? Because we saw that the Rambam seemed to include in his commentary two of the three. Not one of them was that a person shouldn't do it. And the only person is a person should do it to achieve Kedusha. Left out a little bit, this is the Nazir part of doing his remediation. So it's interesting to point out, I hope I did it here, is that the Rambam uses two words to describe a person's behavior. And it's done, and it's very, very subtle. I may not have included it as I was putting the class together, so I'm just going to have to tell you. And this is what Rabbi Sachs alludes to in his article, this week's Parsha. So the Rambam... the Rambam writes in two places about, let's go look at the line right above it, Hilchodeo. Lo yifazer momono elanotein staka kafi misat yado umalvek roi lemishit tzarich. A person should, this is the end of that Rambam of the Golden Path. A person should not be overly generous and irresponsible with charity, and shouldn't be a miser. And a person shouldn't be frivolous and capricious, and he shouldn't be morose and too melancholy. This is the way that Chachamim behave. So according to the Rambam, a person who could stay in the middle of the path would be considered a Chacham. And a Chacham is someone who is able to be kind of wise enough to know how to navigate the world. In a different place, which I don't think that I photocopied it, hold on a second if I did, in a different place, the Rambam writes that a person who needs to go from one, does go from one side to another for whatever reason, for a good reason, could be called a Chassid. And the distinction is as follows, that a Chassid is someone who is internally driven, is someone who's looking for an extra level of piety. And that extra level of piety comes at the expense of worldly engagement. A Chacham is someone who introduces his or her wisdom into the world around him and her, and is, although maybe sacrificing that inner level of piety is for what that person's pursuits are, but is engaging the world in a way which is what the Rambam believes we were meant to be. And that was why the Rambam would contradict himself. Because he's not saying that the Nazir in and of itself is something one should refrain from. It's like that, like there's a mitzvah that's saying in the Torah to give a get. So does that mean that everyone who's married should give a get, to kind of mitzvah of giving a get? Not every mitzvah that's in the Torah is something that we have to aspire to do. And there are other mitzvot without going into all of them. And some of the mitzvot in the Torah are there, and they're just there for Jewish, like Ben Sora Mora. They're just there because we're there to learn from them, and it doesn't mean it even happened. So the concept of the Nazir is for someone who's remediating, or for someone who's looking for that spiritual quest. You can do it, and you can be a chassid. The question is that kind of a person is serving life the way that life should be led. So the Rambam is implying that it's okay to do it for your spiritual quest, but it's not necessarily the ideal state of mind. And that would be the inner contradiction. You should know that, getting back to Rav Kook before we get to him, Rav Kook writes very interesting, is that more of a subtlety, because I think I'm overstating this a little for those who want to study Rav Kook, or have studied already, and say, well, he doesn't really say it in these words. I've always understood it to mean this, and I'm saying it with not a degree of apprehension, but with some fair amount of editorialization. So bear with me. Rav Kook was not a supporter of the Muslim movement. Because the Muslim movement, Rabbi Saul Salanter, and those who were parallel the time of the great yeshiva growth of the late 1800s and past the yeshiva movement, was promoted the sense of self-character perfection, which of course has many benefits to it, and it can improve all communities and societies. And if only everyone who studied Torah would be able to perfect his or her character. But the reason why Rav Kook, in a general sense, was not a supporter, because he felt that studying Musar would too much emphasize the self at the expense of the community. And that if your Torah study is going to become self-reflective to the point that it's about you improving your own persona and behavior and your character, which has value to it, it has to come at the expense of understanding that the world around us needs more active person who can engage. So the Muslim movement almost disengages a person. Now we saw this in the extremes, let's say the Navardic Hasidim were a sect of Hasidim. I don't think they really exist very much in any significant numbers. The Navardic Hasidim actually took this to the extreme and they believed in complete self-deprecation, that they had no value in the world, because that would be, they would express themselves in the highest way if they were to express themselves in no way. So you see that Rav Kook's apprehension about this Muslim movement certainly had meaning to it, because look what happened if you took it to the extreme. So of course now you could say that the Rav Kook approach, with taking to the extreme of looking to the community, would also not be a healthy way to look at life. Rav Kook writes when he, but he was aware of that. He was absolutely aware of that. He said as an introduction to the, when he spoke at the opening of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, it was exactly his theme, is that there's a great deal of excitement to bring the Torah outwards, but there's also a great deal of apprehension and consideration and almost fear for importing cultures that would be contrary to Torah. So there certainly needs to be a balance at all times, and we have to be aware of it. So this is true also about the Chassid and about the Chacham. They both have a value, but it doesn't mean that it's one that we shouldn't necessarily pursue. Which brings me to the words of Rav Kook. I took this from the non-original, from a copied source, but I have the original in the library, and I checked it, it's accurate. Neder Nazir Lazir Hashem. Just to tell you the name of this book, this is Orot HaKodesh. Most of the Rav Kook books that we have were edited and produced and brought to publication by his son Rav Tzvi Yehuda. And the reason why that's important is that much later on in the history of Rav Kook's writings, and then like post 1980s, 1990s, where there was a fair amount of new releases of Rav Kook's writing called the Shmona Kibbutzim that no one had really seen except for a select few. And over the years, there was a criticism that Rav Tzvi Yehuda, his son, was very selective in what he released in order to, this is what the critical thinking was, I don't ascribe to this at all, they believe that he was releasing what fit into his worldview and was editing what was not consistent with the holistic nature of Rav Kook. I'm certainly no expert in Rav Kook, but if the more you read about him, and now that there's much more, there's been a flood of manuscripts that have been released to the general public without any editorialization. I've never seen anything that would be inconsistent with what Rav Tzvi Yehuda produced. But because it was obscured and people knew that there was a library of material that wasn't released, that came with conspiracy thinking. So Rav Kook, Rav Tzvi Yehuda produced most of Rav Kook's books. The one set that was not done by Rav Tzvi Yehuda was published by the Nazir. The Nazir was Rav Goren's father-in-law, and he was a very close student of Rav Kook, and he had permission to publish his books. And yes, the Nazir was a Nazir. He really was. So just to put that out there. I don't think it taints this in any way. Neder Nazir Ladizlu Hashem Emet HaDavar HaDerech HaMumutzahu Derech HaChayim. The truth is that the way that a person should live his life is in the middle, like the Rambam says, Hamusharim aruyim lakol adam, and that's what everyone should strive for. V'zoti eitzat Hashem beruach haTorah. I'm reading in Hebrew because I think it's just nice to read his Hebrew. V'odat lam tederach sheyilchu ba v'tamaseh sher yasu ne tederach zu beit chayim mikom makom teva haskula hanishmatit hu notein shechidim yimtzu b'olam. The way of the world is that there are certain people that are endowed with a charged and elevated spiritual soul. V'chaye aprishut hakitzonit im atara hamuflaga hi neota lahem. Those people are appropriate to reach and to strive for a higher level. K'dei l'chpoch derech l'olam kulo la'ir netivot alohim. But not as a way like we said about the Rambam, Chassid and Chacham, but because that person, if he reaches this spiritually elevated place, will bring new goodness into the world. So there's a nuanced difference between the Rambam and Rav Kook. The nuanced difference is that the person who chooses this life is not doing anything which would be de facto or frowned upon. That person is bringing something very special into the world, and good for him. But that's not for everybody. So it goes back to the Netziv. So as I said, I think that Rav Kook really has a very strong connection to the Netziv's writing. Ve'eila ha'gdolim motzim b'tochnam ha'kitzoniyat ota sviat chayim. They find through this extreme measure a certain satisfaction. Notice how Rav Cook writes that a person who finds this path has to find it with a degree of satisfaction. As opposed to what?
That it's a negative.
Negative, it's a sacrifice.
It's a burden, right?
It's a burden. It's not a burden. And that, again, how is that different for the Rambam? I must confess I'm making this up, but I think it makes sense. Why is this different from the Rambam? What did the Rambam say it was? Go back to the Rambam, the first one we read.
To enhance one's spirituality.
But what was the reason why the Rambam said to bring a chatat? Because he was depriving himself. So according to the Rambam's interpretation of a Nazir, it's a sense of deprivation. According to Rav Cook's interpretation of a Nazir, it's a sense of spiritual enhancement, but not for everybody.
Why is he bringing a chatat?
Why is he bringing chatas? I don't know what to say. It's a good question.
If you look at
it would have to be the Ramban. It would have to be the Ramban. Because the Ramban would say to bring the chatas because he was there and then he stopped. It'd have to be consistent with the Ramban. Which, by the way, if I can just get back to it, the Ramban, I know this is completely now, was not planning on saying it, but the father of all religious Zionism that goes back, predates all of the commentaries of the Ramban. So I've always liked to find connections to the Rambam and Rav Cook. Ramban, not Rav Rambam. Ramban. So it had to be the Ramban, that he left Nazirut and therefore he has to bring a chatat. Yeah, so.
If you look at the Rambam's Nazirut, it really is exactly what you're saying. He says there are two elements. The first one is a negative. Hareini Nazir as a burden if I do such and such.
Right.
That's a burden.
That's a burden,
however,
right.
Hanadel Hashem,
Kedusha, right.
Is a
Kodesh, right. So,
that's, I mean,
the second one, it works.
Differentiate between how do I view the Nazirus? Yeah. Is it a means of I do it?
Okay,
do it,
that's a good point.
Don't brush my teeth, I'm going to take Nazirus upon myself. That's a burden.
Right.
On the other hand, I'm going to. And so, even the terminology, one is Nazir and one is Nazir.
All right. So let's take your analysis and flip the Rambam for a minute. So what we can therefore say in the Rambam is the following. The Rambam looks, and it's really what you're saying, but just taking now through the prism of Rav Cook. The Rambam looks at Nazirut in two perspectives. Are you a sacrificing person that's remediating some sort of a weakness in your character, which would be not the ideal state, because you shouldn't have this imperfection, and that's why you bring a chatas? Or are you doing it because you want to reach that highest level quest of spiritualism like the Ramban, and you can get there? And not like the Netziv, you know, it's all kind of coming together. The Netziv would tell you, yes, this is where you belong. This is your pay grade. You can reach that highest level. So it could very well be, not taking the Saxonian perspective of between a Chassid and a Chacham, but taking the Bekerish approach or the Rav Cook approaches and the Netziv's approach, is that, as I started saying earlier, that this is not a binary set of laws. And that really is very individualistic, which is really important because... And I can't reiterate this enough, that we should always remember that the spiritual quest that we all have shouldn't be expected to be uniform. And religious communities that expect uniformity for all practice, it could really create a significant dissonance between people and their own ritual behavior. There's Hasidic groups that have takanas. You know what the takanas are? I'm a little hesitant to be too explicit about the different types, but there are takanas that are out there, the Hasidic groups, and particularly around sexual behavior. Sexual behavior is mandated to be in a certain level of kind of sexual purity, where the Ramban, by the way, would agree to it if you look at Kedoshim Tiyu. But he would agree to it for the person that the Netziv says, and Rav Cook says, and the second Rambam would say, is at that level. Otherwise, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, if you look at the Hilchot Eben Ezer, where there really is an explicit description of normative sexual behavior, the Shulchan Aruch couldn't be more mainstream. Mainstream in which society, obviously that would be difficult to pin down, but if you'd ever actually study the laws of sexual behavior in Shulchan Aruch, you'd be shocked to be surprised how unrestrictive it is. But if you would look at some of the rules that are around this, I'm just using this as one example, you can use many examples of how certain beliefs have taken what should be extreme behavior and brought it to the normative. And that is an important point that I thought would be worthwhile bringing out from these commentaries. The end of this Rav Kook to me is a little bit obscure, and I'd rather not get to it. I just didn't think I'm hiding it from you. To look at it at home. I want to bring you, please, to the last page. It's a sweet little safer I have in the house. I picked it up in... It's not so sweet. I mean, it's not nice to say that. It's a very impressive Talmud Chacham. But it's kind of like a long vortlach on the parsha. So if you were a shul rabbi and you needed to come up every week with a homiletic appreciation of some textual analysis, this would be the book you would use. So for those who want to have a career change and you're fluent in Hebrew, I would tell you, you don't really need more than this book. He's got, like, every Shabbos, he's got that perfect Dvar Torah, if you want to give. But it's not one board like Mayan Ashal Torah. It's a sophisticated set of thinking. He's a Haaretz Yom guy, so you can appreciate that. I'm sure he's got a lot to add. What is that?
1 year only?
The rule is that no one remembers what you say from year to year. So you can use it every single year and then say... Or just get, or if you want to be the scholar in residence every Shabbos, then that's also fine. He picks up. Remember, I told you I wanted to say what Rashi says in the beginning. I'm a little hesitant because I find that the dinim of the sota is a little, they're harsh. It's a harsh set of halacha. It doesn't really conform to the language of modern 21st century, and it puts all the blame on infidelity on the woman, and doesn't acknowledge that there is culpability to go around. And it seems that the punishment is very extreme and it's one sided. That said, no apologetics Judaism, at least validating it for those that feel it's also harsh. Torah is Torah, and halacha is halacha, and that's what we go by. I mean, I can explain it because the progenitors of all Judaism are from the women, and the birth of the child is important to understand the lineage, and just from a biological perspective, it would make sense why there's more purity in a sense that a woman has to maintain in marriage, because of, without taking to the concept of vows and commitment and fidelity, just from a pure halachic point of view. It's not to get too apologetic, but because I'm mentioning it, I think it was important to introduce it. So I believe it's Rashi, which I've listened to Dr. Friedman and brought in this little tiny chumash. So I don't think I'll be able to, even with my
third to last
funky glasses.
I think it's third to last one.
Okay, it's the third last line. Thank you. Yafrish. A person should separate himself out. Lama nismacha parshat nazir la parshat sota. Lomalacha. Shekol haro'eh sota mekukala. Was it Yivater Atzmo? Was it Yazir Atzmo min Ayayin? Shu mevi l'dei neyuf. So the person who sees a sota in his lifetime should refrain from wine, because a wine is going to end up bringing to, which bring, well, it brings the man into the story, which does it make a little bit some degree of some degree of fairness in the way that this is referenced. A person who sees the sota should refrain from wine, because the wine will lead to inappropriate debauchery and bring a person to sin with excessive behavior. Will take away borders and limits. So again, this is drush, but Rashi does see the juxtaposition of the two sides. And there is something to be said about that. But getting back to our frame, before I get to Rav Bandus and what other people who comment on it, how does Rashi see a nazir? Implicit, it's not explicit. Critical thinking. How does Rashi see a nazir? In which of the buckets that we set up?
Not as a very kadosh person.
Not a kadosh person, right. A person who needs to find some intervention for a potential weakness in character. So right, it's preventive or it's responsive. Because it's preventive, you shouldn't get there, but it's responsive, because if you're there, kind of like the Netziv, what did you do wrong? You know, what brings you to this place? So Rabbanus says, and it's a five-page essay, and I'm really not doing it justice by just bringing it down to two paragraphs. I try to find the two that try to sum it up. He says that if you look at Reuven, Shevet Reuben is Eila Rasha, Eila Shechena on Parshat Korach, that that all the people who were around Korach were the ones who fell into the trap. Reuben fell into the trap of Korach, who was a Levi, because they were close to each other. That's the famous Rashi of Eila Rasha, Eila Shechena. He says that the proximity to something negative affects us. This is the homiletical interpretation. And that we shouldn't be inured or immune to the fact that where our exposure is will have an effect on us on our way that we behave and the way that we think. Which, be interesting, speaks a little bit to the idea, should we live our lives as separatists and purists and not engage? I remember when seeing a Dvar Torah, I tried to find it before I came here. Maybe whoever's listening to this, wherever it's posted, can send me the source. I thought it was the Meshech Chachma, but it's not. But I made the mistake of looking there, because now I can't say it was the Meshech Chachma. Because I don't mind saying something and it's not there. But once I know it's not, that's just completely disingenuine. When Abraham says, Ulai yesh chamishim tzadikim betoch ha'ir, so there's a commentary is, chamishim tzadikim, what is the word describing it? Betoch ha'ir. Because don't tell me there are 50 tzaddikim that are living up on a mountainside and that's going to save Sodom. What we need to see is the chamishim tzaddikim betochir. That's what characterizes a righteous person. A person is willing to engage and integrate. So getting back to Avon, it's a person who maybe integrates too much, you get all this exposure. How do you find the balance between the two? I want to come back to that in a minute. See, he says that's what the Nazir is teaching us. The Nazir is teaching us this. Okay, you want to integrate, you want to engage, you want to inject meaning, you want to have a whole broad sector of life in front of you. Oh, I'm sorry, it's my brain. Let's be aware of the fact that if there's a negative influence, you need to respond. You know, don't let negative influences kind of accumulate in your life until it begins to change you. Be sensitive to it. So it doesn't mean like we say, oh, Rashi, oh, you're so weak, you're so nuzzier, now you have to not drink wine. It just means be a little sensitive to what goes in life, because the same way that, and he writes this for the doctors in the room, the same way that there are physical germs that make us ill and that we have to take precautionary measures, he says there are spiritual germs. And those spiritual germs need spiritual medication. And the Nazir is a spiritual medication. And just to conclude, Rav Kook writes in letter 555, if I'd ever given the opportunity to give a class that's not Parsha for the same group, because I wouldn't want to give it anyone else. Letter 555, Rav Kook is criticized by the author, which is really outrageous, that he is too much of an apologetic and he's too involved. And he writes a whole long thesis about the concept of engaging from a rabbinic point of view. But for that, we'll have to come back another time.
Thank you very much.